Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Seconds there, but good evening. Well, I think the howdy took care of that, didn't it? It's 2 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. Friday on the front porch. An evening oh so many members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation look forward to, as do I. Friday on the front porch, of course, is that evening when we bring together the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of folks for a goodwill conversation on topics ranging far and wide, and you too can be a part of it. If you'd like to, your best bet is to send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype. On Skype. Do not send a contact request to me. Do not try to Skype to me during the roundtable conversation. It all goes through Sparky. Okie dokie. So hopefully, if you've never tried it before, try it. You will love it. And hopefully we will have this evening a rousing good time. And, of course, this is the 12th day of December 2014. Okay, we've got that. This is a live program. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I've got this little mental checklist I go through in my mind of stuff we say at the beginning of the program. So we've got the date. We've got the hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part. Oh, yeah, wander over to the chat room if you wish. We're set to have a wonderful, rousing, good time in real time, the full multimedia experience. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jan and Jerry. Where it's raining in Vegas, I'm told. Good evening, John. Good evening, Lance. Good evening, Sparky in two different locations, both Man Cave and Sparky. Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Sergi. And good evening, Texas T. And good evening, Jeremy. There's Jeremy. So we've got the beginnings of a right dandy good evening, I think, ahead of us. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the Listen Live player, as well as access to the podcasts. It's all just one click away. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. That's good to know. You can get the the pop-out Listen Live players that work just dandy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, or, of course, as Jeremy is, if you are listening via by some mobile device, we recommend the apps from TuneIn and Stitcher, or from the App Store at iTunes, UTunes, OOTUNES or Z, or why can't app developers learn to spell? And there she is. There's News Ninja Carol Baker wandering into the room now. So we are in right good stead for a Jim Dandy Friday on the front porch. A little note to us all from our good friend Tom out in the Bay Area. Came in just shortly before airtime this evening, about an hour and a half. Tom sent a note and said, "It stopped raining here in the Bay Area. 6 inches in 24 hours at home. No damage and only a short power outage." So going out today is a $200 challenge. Let's call it a December's a rough month challenge. And my best to all of my Hornista family members. Okay, so we've got another name. We're all Hornistas now, my friend. So there it is. It's on the table. There is a $200 challenge via Tom in Northern California. And that would be a monumental help in the ongoing attempt to come even and, well, get paid up and come even with the bills. That basically means you double your money. 10 becomes 20, 5 becomes 10, 15, 30, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm pleased to say that it turns out that Ron just doubled his, and our good friend Greg, moderator from the Molloy chat room, just doubled his. So there is $110 remaining in doubling challenge funds out there for the evening for anyone who wants to participate. The wild rice premium remains on the table. A pound, anybody who wants to kick in $100, pound of wild rice, hand-gathered and processed in the same way it's been processed for, yea, verily, thousands upon thousands of years from the pristine waters of northern Wisconsin. So hopefully that takes care of all the, well, business isn't the word, well, just details, the details. The housekeeping details that attend the beginning of the program. As I was setting up the gizmo line this evening before airtime, it occurred to me that maybe someday, and I think it would be better sooner rather than later, it would be great to bring another gizmo line into the process. So at some point in time, maybe we'll have a conversation about doing that. And that would mean one more phone line to add to the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. Your thoughts always welcome. But anyway, the gizmo line for later on this evening, if you do not know. You know, you never know when we're going to be talking to new listeners, and I make the mistake of presuming that everybody knows how everything goes. But no. There are always new listeners here. I mean, Ben Birch tried to explain to me once just how many different outlets there are for the horn. And, I mean, this thing even goes out into places on the Internet where we have no way of knowing. It's just sort of out there and people find us. And we're working on getting listed back on iTunes Radio, but, you know, we got delisted back around the derecho in the summer of 2012. And those people are hard to reach. Did you know that? I mean, it's like more difficult than Oz the Great and Terrible. So, anyway. Where was I? Oh, yeah. That pretty much takes care of the housekeeping. This being Friday on the Front Porch, the gizmo line is 304-663-HORN. 304-663-4676. And again, Sparky Dunk is the contact that you make, that you reach out for on Skype to join the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. Well, thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Jeremy just doubled his contribution, so there remain now $90 in challenge matching funds from a mercifully not flooded out Tom in the Bay Area. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Now, where do we want to go this evening? After our discussion last night of the wildly clueless crew at Greenpeace, I wanted to follow up for just a moment. No. This isn't necessarily about tree beard and celery and kohlrabi and lentil and gas giant and all of their friends. No, this is because, well, one, I went looking to find out who all was covering this story. The Guardian covered it. Obviously, the BBC covered it. Lo and behold, NBC covered it. I found it interesting, however, that there was no coverage of the story at Think Progress. And I scanned Raw Story earlier today. No coverage there. And I just find that interesting. However, in all of the stories that I did read, and this is sort of nerdy, this isn't to the substance of being so colonialist and clueless and privileged that you just go up and stomp around. I mean, no, this isn't that part. This is something that I saw in almost every article I did find covering the story, and it's more in the way of talking of what we talk about when we talk about being human. And it's a statement that's in almost every story. And it goes something like this in the story from NBC News. Alan Boyle, the author of that story. Just a single sentence. Okay, two sentences. The stunt sparked outrage from Peruvian officials as well as fans of the Nazca lines. Fans? Really? The Nazca lines have fans? What? Do they sleep overnight at the foot of that, or at the head of the trail and like waiting for Star Wars tickets or something? Do women throw their underwear at the Nazca? I don't know. But anyway, as well as fans of the Nazca lines, come on, Bob, which were scratched in the desert surface centuries ago and depict, actually it's more than a millennium ago. I mean, why waste a good word like millennium whenever you get to use it, huh? And depict plants, creatures, and mythical beings. Okay. And this is the sentence. Archaeologists have suggested the mysterious lines. Mysterious? Bob Kincaid, human theremin. The mysterious lines might, important word there, have been, I kind of wish I could conjure Dr. John on this one. He'd be much better on this than I. Archaeologists have suggested the mysterious lines might have been used as ritual astronomical calendars or religious symbols. And maybe I'm just being a little prickly. Channeling my inner cactus. But every time I read that, and you read that in virtually every story, or at least every story I've run across about this, apparently, we have this view, and I think it's a false view of the ancients as being a humorless lot. I mean, well, of course, those geoglyphs on the Nazca Plains, they have to be for ritual astronomical purposes or religious symbols. I mean, they just have to. I mean, they couldn't possibly have done that for fun. They couldn't possibly have just done it, you know, ars gratia artis, art for art's sake. Oh, heck no! I mean, that's something only we smart, modern people do. Right? But it's always... No one knows why they built the pyramids. Perhaps for ritual astronomical purposes, or religious reasons. Because that's the only motivations the ancients have. Not love, not hate, not ambivalence, not fun, not art. Just ritual, astronomical, or religious purposes. I mean, in the case of the Nazca lines, it's not true, although this article repeats it, it is not true that they are visible only from the air. That's what you get when you background your story by checking into Eric von Daniken. Ancient astronauts. How? You can see them from the surrounding hills. You can see the monkey and the hummingbird and the spider. And the geometrics and the what have you. But it opens a question, I hope, on what it is that we think it is to be human. And I think the people that think about these things can't get past the ritual, because I guess human beings, especially ancient ones, don't get just to do things. You know, maybe Og and Gronk weren't sitting around on one of the foothills one day and looked out at that broad plain. There were a people called the Nazca, or that's what we call them. No, Devin, no, damn it, no, damn it, no. It is not an alien runway. The ancients would carry their pitch pine torches, and they would line up along the straight lines and welcome their galactic overlords. Don't! Oh! You see what we're up against. Alien runway. Just another alien runway. In the sparkling lights. Sparkling lights! Well, there I go channeling Jim Morrison. And poorly, I might add. Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy and Todd. Had to turn you down, Bob. You scared the pets. Oh, dear. Didn't mean to. Sorry. But so there's just that out there. Is it possible, I ask, is it possible? Oh, okay, well, then we'll give you your alien runway, Devin. Because, yeah, it makes it much easier to use the Stargate. Okay, see, there. That's exactly the attitude I was looking for, Ron. Don't discount the possibility that they had a sense of humor and decided to do this just to F with our heads. Can't you just imagine the meeting where the equivalent of Robin Williams comes up with the idea and tries to explain it to his friends, much like Robin explaining how golf was created. No, no, you do it 18 more times. Exactly. Hey, hey, come on. Who wants to take some maize beer and go make monkeys in the dirt? And you know what? It doesn't make them less special if it was just people having a good time. Because, shh, there's a great possibility that the peoples who made these things, and maybe this is the important lesson out of all of this for us, there's a significant possibility that the people who made these things had more leisure time than we do. Oh, no, they didn't hi-fi this and Android that. You have to say that, of course. But they had fresh water. And they had, I think, in that general area, they had a fantastic cotton agriculture. I think it's somewhere down in that general neck of the woods that you find one of the first cities that was ever developed that shows no sign of warfare. No sign of needing warfare defenses. Yeah, see, okay, we're making progress now, News Ninja Carol Baker. Leisure time? What is this leisure time you speak of? And there's Ron and Raleigh. Okay, we're getting into the spirit of things now. Hey, Bob, the aliens could have been flying by and said, what are those guys drinking down there that makes them make monkeys in the sand? Yes. See how it works? And thank you very kindly to Jan and Jerry, who took the available challenge money down to only $50. Bless your heart, Tom. You get a response. And then Tim. Tim jumped in and added a challenge to the challenge. He says, I make a challenge to all the hornies. That's hornistas now, Tim. Match my $100. You love the horn, give. I love you all. I love all you people. You people. And I want to keep the horn on the air. Oh, and it's finally raining here in Los Angeles. And believe it or not, the air is clean. Nice. I noticed, by the way, you'll have to explain it, Tim. I noticed Tim went into a little, it looked like he was getting a little bit irked on Twitter earlier today. And you thought West Virginia had people who don't think? We'll have to have an explanation of that at some point. Yes, Devin. Yes, it may be that the crystal skull really was a bong. Here! Fingers or thumbs? Fingers or thumbs? Fingers or thumbs? So that's just kind of a little follow-up. That anytime you see the ancients certainly used these for religious ritual purposes. Don't really know. These are not a people who left a written record. When you see statements like that, what it means is that those were the boundaries of the researcher's imagination. Ritual purposes. Shit, it's March. We got to go dance around the spider now. Oh, really? It's October? Well, that means we play our bone flutes around the hummingbird. Ritual. But we have ever so much more to go into beyond that this evening. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Gerald in the chat room noting, I'll take ancient peoples and unexplained art for $500, Bob. I don't have the $500. but there's a no, there's an abundance of stuff to deal with out there this evening. And I wanted to go sort of lightheartedly into the program because it could get pretty grim and stupid pretty quick. One of the things that we know about the ancient cultures that developed along the Pacific coastline and into the Andean hills of South America, and most people know only about the Inca, when in fact the Inca was the name of the headman as opposed to the name of an entire people or culture or civilization. No surprise, though, because we refer to the Mexica people as the Aztecs. And we refer to Moctezuma, their last revered speaker, as an emperor when he wasn't. You remember what the angry Indian was talking about last night? About different forms of governance and different forms of cultural social management? If I recall correctly, Angry mentioned the Haudenosaunee Confederation, sometimes referred to wrongly by the white folks as the Iroquois. And yes, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, those guys, they did look to the way there were, what, seven nations of the Haudenosaunee? And they managed themselves all in confederation with a set of rules that wound up looking surprisingly like some principles we incorporated into our own North American government. The same applies to the Mexica, who were not the Aztecs. The Mexica people were one-third of the Triple Alliance. I'm trying to remember the other two. The other capital was Texcoco. But anyway, their leader, and the word in Nahuatl, which I'm sure I'm butchering, is Uitlapilani. It means revered speaker. It doesn't mean emperor. Because the Mexica Empire was not an empire as we understand it. That's what we transposed upon it. Yes, there was military. Yes, there was warfare. Yes, there was an extensive and intricate trade network. But, you know, that kind of existed all over the North American continent. There's nothing like being a 20-year-old little baby archaeologist in the making, scraping away in the dirt in West Tennessee, and suddenly being shown a piece of mica that came from the Great Lakes. How'd that get there? Aliens. Ancient lost tribes of Israel, that's how. But we misunderstand a whole lot of stuff. Just like we misunderstand the cultures of the... Andean littoral of the western littoral of the Andean in South America. Pretty much from Colombia and Ecuador all the way down. Those cultures rose and fell, and in many instances they rose and fell with changes in the climate. And changes in weather patterns. Because if you don't get, for instance, the rains that, like, the Pineapple Express just delivered to the California coastline, and you don't get them for a very long time, your culture dries up and blows away, no matter how brilliant it is. And that brings us, of course it does, that brings us to Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and that comedy program that they don't intend to be a comedy program, but oh my God, it really is, Fox and Friends, featuring Mensa member Elizabeth Hasselbeck and Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade, the three of whom together could not put together a decent room temperature IQ. Anyway, here we go. Hockey puck!
A wise man once said, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. John Stossel says that's the problem with most Americans, who often ignore reason on some of the most important issues of our day.
Well, we don't have to take the word for Elizabeth to know what John Stossel says.
I'm already laughing. I don't know about you. Okay, Irish Dave. Irish Dave says, he says, frankly, Bob, I have mixed feelings about ambivalence as a motive. By the way, can you even say making a monkey in the sand on the family radio? I heard that there was a porn site called makingmonkeysinthesand.xxx. Don't look. For fuck's sake, don't look. And yes, absolutely, Luda. Luda points out, the descendants of the Nazca are still alive and kicking. Has anyone even bothered to ask them? But I'm sure brown people aren't capable of white intelligence. See, there you go. It reminds me of a story told about a woman who was working among Central American peoples, talking about, you know, the Maya did this and the Maya did that. And, you know, pointing at pyramids, which are pretty damn impressive until you realize that they pyramided themselves right out of a culture. You know, they deforested the entire region to use for firewood, to burn rock, to make lime, to gesso the pyramids so they'd be all shiny and white in the middle of all that pretty green. And after a while, people just got disgusted with carrying a bunch of useless rich people on their back and decided to go back to subsistence farming in the hills, and there was climate change, and there were mudslides, and it was a mess. Right. And in the course of that, the anthropologist is working among the people, the Maya this, the Maya that, and they look at her and say, whatever happened to the Maya? And she realized how culturally clueless she'd been, and she said, you are the Maya. Oh, right. Okay, back to Fox and the stupid hockey puck.
Don't say he's here already. It's a topic he's tackling on the show tonight. Watch.
Some Americans say business hurts poor people.
Capitalism might be the problem that creates so many poor people.
Famous actors tell the United Nations fossil fuels will kill us.
Accelerated climate change is here right now.
It is? Some people believe all kinds of things.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do.
Yes. People have seen ghosts.
Yeah, by the way, notice the masterful, truly masterful use of the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda style book, Some People, in which one goes out onto the street and asks people about whether they believe in ghosts. Well, you know what? 97% of scientists is not some people. That's 97% of scientists, John Stossel, you life support system for a porn stash. But this is going to be, just be patient, because this is going to be fun.
Tonight, watch.
Some Americans say business hurts poor people.
Capitalism might be the problem that creates so many poor people.
Famous actors tell the United Nations fossil fuels will kill us.
Accelerated climate change is here right now.
Okay, never mind the climate change for just a time out, Jack. Okay, time out. Fossil fuels, John Stossel, fossil fool, do kill us. 45,000 people a year in the United States alone die from diseases. They are excess deaths that occur because they breathe the particulate filth that comes out of the stacks of coal-fired power plants. Those aren't some people. Those are some people, but they're not belief things, and they're not the same as believing in ghosts, because the people who die were formerly real, actual, honest-to-God, no-kidding people, but now they're dead because of the combustion of a fossil fuel. Just, you know, saying. A phrase I just, you know, despise. I think that's going to be my New Year's resolution. I'm going to clean up stupid, idioms from my language. Anyway, yeah, back to the fun.
It is? Some people believe all kinds of things.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do.
Yes.
Notice that now he has created a false equivalence between acknowledging the scientific reality of climate change with believing in ghosts. And I'm not going to start the great ghost discussion here because I'm agnostic, but I ascribe to Shakespeare. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies, and you know, we'll call it at that.
People have seen ghosts.
I don't need proof for it.
No proof?
The host of Stossel, John Stossel, on the Fox Business Network joins us now.
The walking stash is here.
And John, to your point, many Americans, you're saying a lot of Americans believe in ridiculous stuff. Let's start with climate change.
Oh! Ooh-wee! Irish Dave, I like the cut of your jib. Didn't John Stossel die this year? Oh, wait, that was Harry Reams. See what you did there.
We've heard from many Americans, many prominent Americans, it's the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Well, you said two things. I believe in climate change. Climate changes. Always has, always
yep.
will.
Oh, see, this is the new one. This is what comes after I'm not a scientist. Climate always changes. Which is actually weather always changes. You know, unless you're in San Diego. Did it rain? Did it rain in San Diego, too? Do all the weather guys in San Diego just go absolutely hog wild on a rainy day in San Diego? I mean, do they go out and get electrocuted broadcasting live from the rain? Yeah, but anyway, you get my meaning.
Well, but climate catastrophe? Every decade, fewer people die from the weather because of fossil fuels, because they're able to protect themselves. We adjust. Big difference between climate change is going to kill us and climate changes.
Stupid. Every decade, fewer people die because of fossil fuels. Is that just something they say? Just saying? Is that a just saying for the right wing? Because, you want to know who he just climbed? You want to know who John Stossel just climbed into bed with? Don Blankenship. No, I'm not kidding. Don Blankenship. He really, really did. Because that's what Don Blankenship says when he's out talking to the, you know, the busted knuckle Rotary Club and the left hand Chamber of Commerce. Thanks to the Gorges of coal, we now have people who don't die freezing to death in the dark. No, really. Always makes me wonder about my ancestors. Makes me wonder about everybody's ancestors. Makes me have a profound respect for the people who lived here for tens of thousands of years without burning so much as a lump of coal. Yeah. I mean, this earth was populating itself pretty good without the use of hydrocarbons. Of course, John Stossel can count on the fact that the Atne Ute Aitbre Ewersve of Oxfay, if you own it, what I mean, will never ask hard questions like, well, wait a minute, John, so what you're saying is fossil fuel is resulting in the population explosion and the fact that we got a wildly overpopulated planet? Now stop that, Irish Dave. What? John Stossel climbed into bed with Don Blankenship. He's gone all fagoot. I am fagoot. Can't help it. I'll be darned. Thank you, Greg. It did rain in San Diego today. God only knows how many weathermen were electrocuted. Back to John Stossel, because You only think this is stupid now. They're going to redefine stupid.
Then you should actually, maybe it would be reasonable to point out the pluses of fossil
fuels. In the short term, at least, lives are being saved if the planet warms.
Mm-hmm.
You do have some very credible people saying it's done and it's a threat to world peace, like Al Gore, yeah. And you have Secretary of State Kerry.
I love that part. He says Al Gore and John Stossel slaps his knee. Yeah, Carol didn't let that one go by either. John Stossel climbs into bed with Don Blankenship. Who rides whose porn stash? Yeah, probably didn't want to hear that noise either, did you?
Well, it is done. There's good evidence man contributes to global warming. But I say, so what? We can deal with that. It's not a catastrophe. And
we'll get our global warming ray gun out and just torture it. Maybe we can rectally feed global warming. That'll do it.
Cold is far worse for hurting people than warmth.
We heard in that soundbite montage a woman.
No, stupids. For a minute, can I interject something, stupid people? Cold is far worse for hurting people than global warming. Under that little thought pattern. There would be no Inuit people. The Ainu people of northern Japan would not be the Ainu people of northern Japan. The Korean people on the Korean Peninsula would be, well, it would just be a vast empty wasteland. It goes back to one of the first things that I observed when I first saw northern Wisconsin and fell in love with it. And that is such a magical place that once you've figured out how to deal with the weather, it's pretty much paradise. And that goes back to the clever little primates that we humans are. You know, ancient astronauts did not land in Schwamigan Bay or the Kakagan Sloughs and hand wild rice to the peoples who live there. Oh, thank you, ancient astronauts. No! This is generation upon generation upon generation of human genius. And genius that develops in and around the places where human beings live. If cold is so bad for you, how did humans get up into the northern latitudes of the northern hemisphere and stay there so long that we freaking turned white? That's a lot of generations without any freaking sunlight. It takes a lot of time to drive every last bit of pigment out of a human being. I see these things in clips, and for the life of me, I cannot fathom what it must be like to just get up in the morning and go padding through the living room on your way to the kitchen, and put the coffee on, and pick up the clicker, and you turn on the TV, and it's right where it was when you turned it off, and where that is Fox. And you start your day the same way you ended it, with a steady stream of unmitigated stupid pouring into your noggin. Just like Claudius pouring poison right into the ear of poor old Hamlet's daddy.
Say that she believed in ghosts, then there are a lot of people who really believe, and if they're in the newspaper and they see the astrology thing, they read it because they think it's going to happen.
42% believe in ghosts, 36% in UFOs, 29% believe in astrology. I thought it was higher. We once had a horoscope done on a mass murderer.
And I took it to a classroom of college students and said, this is your horoscope. We'd collected their birth dates before. Don't look at your neighbors. 25 pages. And they were going through and saying, wow, I didn't believe in astrology before, but no one could have known these things about me. And that's because psychics and fortune tellers, they're good at saying things that people believe are true about everyone.
What about
Fox? He just described Fox.
Wage war. What do you have to say about that?
True. You women earn less than we men do, but...
Okay, here's where the hockey puck kicks in. Let's get it all.
It's about me. And that's because psychics and fortune tellers, they're good at saying things that people believe are true about everyone.
What about wage war? What do you have to say about that? People believe
it's true. You women earn less than we men do, but there are reasons for it. You maybe are more sensible. You have put more emphasis on not working in a horrible place, not working in dangerous places. You take time off to take care of a family. There's a reason for that.
It's not because there's sexism out there. It is inherently more dangerous for a guy to work at Walmart than it is for a woman, and therefore a woman will not make the same working at Walmart as a man. Or maybe she, why is it that she makes less before she takes time off to have the baby? I mean, even the most cursory attempt to deconstruct some of this lunacy. Nah, it's not lunacy. To deconstruct some of this this deliberate lying yields results.
How do these ridiculous things get stuck in our heads?
Well, evolution. I mean, a lot of the scare.
No. So we're going to talk about we're going to make fun of climate change, but John Stossel is a devoted evolutionist. Forgot to stop at the liquor store today, I did. No tequila. The swirly straws in the dishwater. Damn it.
You take time off to take care of a family. There's a reason for that.
How do these ridiculous things get stuck in our heads?
Well, evolution. I mean, a lot of the scares, because if our ancestors were hyper alert,
sure,
if there was a saber-toothed tiger around, they were dead. So you learn to respond to...
I'm warning you. Really. Okay, well, there's no arguing with your logic, Irish Dave. Also, too, women's don't have no penises. Because, you know, that's an extra person. Oh, God. Yeah, Irish Dave's really working the logic side of the street. Wait just a gall darn minute. If your cat jumps on a cold stove, well, you know, plus two also, if cold meant no people, who would have the half-baked Alaskan married? Read the book. Ron and Raleigh asking, Bob, can we get Hulk Hogan to slap this bloviating asshole upside the head again? What are his goddamn bona fides to talk about climate? His degree's in psychology, or as I call it, the science of fooling some of the people all of the time. Robert in Australia pointing out, hold on! He took the horoscope of a mass murderer to a high school and all the class thought it described them? That's very odd. I remember seeing the documentary where James Randi did just that. I wonder if this Fox person is suffering from false memories. No, he's just remembering ancient lives, Robert. Greg writes in, what Fox complaining, moaning about people's belief in ghosts, physics, ability, horoscopes, yet they don't mention their own belief in every supernatural biblical farce? Well, apparently John Stossel's a rational libertarian, and he believes in evolution. We may have to add that one to the list. Because saber-toothed tigers! Fagoot Calliope, Halkin. In the Halkin days when we ran around with saber-toothed tigers. Yeah. You know, I said earlier that I wish we had Dr. John handy for this, but I'm actually grateful that he's not here because he'd be chewing through empty aluminum cans by now. Okay.
Reason for that.
How do these ridiculous things get stuck in our heads?
Well, evolution. I mean, a lot of the scares, because if our ancestors were hyper alert,
sure,
if there was a saber-toothed tiger around.
I don't know. You know, it would have been great if somebody would have said, boo.
They were dead. So you learn to respond to whatever somebody tells you.
As real or not as it may be.
As I remember that series,
like when the shaman tells you that there's a great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky who will smite you if you eat a shrimp.
The Lost, remember that? That's when the...
No.
Yeah, landed.
Oh, no. Okay, this is the hockey puck part. I'm going to shut up now.
Whatever somebody tells you.
As real or not as it may be.
As I remember that series, Land of the Lost, remember that? That's when the...
No.
Yeah, Land of the Lost was afternoon Saturdays when
we
these people try
channel
to exist.
Brian, you're fired.
Did you really? Go out and play in the park. It was crazy to see men try to survive in times of dinosaurs.
If you remember...
Oh, hell, Sleestacks! No, he really did. The one that's either Deucey or Kilmeade said...
You really? Go out and play in the park. It was crazy to see men try to survive in times of dinosaurs.
If you remember Land of the Lost.
Right.
No, it makes Brian feel better.
You know, John's going to be talking about this tonight.
No, really. Really. Got to check the chat room real quick. Yeah. Brian Kilmeade. It's crazy watching men try to survive in the time of dinosaurs. Did I mention that that Ken Ham and his buddies building the Ark Park down in Kentuckistan apparently just lost their taxpayer funding? There is a God.
What, Edis, huh? Yeah, Archie, that's what the Reverend said this last Sunday.
The Reverend Fletcher, whatever. And Emery and Eileen are sitting there having their morning inshore. Watching Fox.
Emery? Emery, I'm so glad I've got you. I wonder if we would have found each other in the age of dinosaurs.
So there we are. At the close of the first hour of Friday on the Front Porch, just trying to be a little bit lighthearted about things. Because it could possibly get grim. God bless them, the interns at NASA have produced a highly choreographed dance parody that features a green woman. Can't really do anything with that on the radio, but the long arm of Gene Roddenberry reaches out and touched NASA. Kissing? What is this kissing? Give me another of those kisses, Gene Kirk. So we will get started with Friday on the Front Porch. You know the drill. Sparky will put out the bat signal. We'll gather the group together We will begin the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Tim's challenge remains on the table, calling for people to match his $100 with which he matched the second half of Tom's challenge. And good evening, and welcome, welcome to the group again. I've seen you to Ricky Carmicide. Good to see you in the gang. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, why is this not working? Dadgummit. I had the gizmo line all up and ready to go. Okay, and... I suspect that was Bill. Bill, you will have to call back. It didn't want to connect you to the gizmo. So try again. All right. Break time. And it's the holiday season. And I haven't played a holiday song yet. We'll remedy that with one of my favorites. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A day of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir. The peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell. Eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a sire knight. They told me a fairy story till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. And I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn. And I saw him in through his disguise. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain, and sadness, lead your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be heaven on earth. The Christmas we get, we deserve. We'll be right back.
classic rock and roll Christmas track, Greg Lake, I Believe in Father Christmas. I think it's just beautiful. It's got a nice secularist kind of vibe to it, too. It is Friday on the front porch. We have the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable pulled together. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm tired, but I'm happy that we didn't get reflooded yesterday.
Glory.
And I've been working and getting rid of the mosquito breeding grounds in the shop.
Ew.
Because what I found out, there were coffee cans underneath the workbench full of parts and bolts and stuff. Filled full of water. So once I started putting the space heater in there, all the little bugs started hatching.
Yuck.
So I had mosquitoes, and then For Earth told me the other bugs I had are fungus gnats.
Who knew they even existed?
But
they're gone now?
No. There's the ones that have hatched, the water's all gone. I've got all the cans dumped and out of the shop, so the water anyway. So maybe if they're still there in the ground, they won't hatch because it's not that warm enough.
But that means you have to be cold and be at least uncomfortable in the man cave, right?
No, I dumped the cans outside.
Well, no, but I mean, can you turn the heat back on and dry things out?
No, the heat's on right now.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's getting dry.
Well, I saw that you were in the man cave and you were also in your ordinary incarnation in the chat room, and I just figured
what is funny. Funny how you can work that with a laptop computer on a Wi-Fi network.
Isn't that cool? Well, we have a Jim Dandy group going this evening. Good evening, Timothy.
Oh, you're talking to me?
I am.
I wasn't even sure if this laptop was going to have a microphone. Cool.
Yeah, you sound great. And good evening, Lance. Lance is with us this evening.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Timothy. Good to see you.
Hello.
And let's see. Good evening, John.
Hey, Bob. I got to tell you, the one time that I screamed out loud at my TV was over John Stossel. It was just after the GM bailout, and he pulls out one of these East German Trabants. And he says, this is what the government does when they build a car. And it's like, yeah, East Germany has so much to do with anything ever. How are you, buddy?
I'm getting it. Well, I was better until, Jesus, I didn't know the Trabby story. And that goes hand in hand with a note we just got from Michael in Madison. I fucking hate John Stossel. Lots of periods, lots of capital letters. Seriously, Bob, that was worse than Limbaugh clips. It hurts us, the pain. I can feel the rage building inside me. I can feel the devolution taking place on a cellular level. Mic smash! I think the reason I despise this hack so much is because for years growing up watching 2020 as a kid, he tricked me and presumably millions of others into thinking that he was just some reasonable, nonpartisan, apolitical, average Joe, contrarian schmuck. At least with the pig man, you knew where what he was all about from the first time you heard him yap. Stossel, I really hate that guy. Don't hold back, Michael. Don't hold back. It can be bad for you. And I really want to bring Bill on, but dadgummit, the gizmo's not working properly, so I'm going to restart the phone and repair it, as opposed to repair it, and see if we can make it work, as opposed to repair or repair it, because we don't have a parrot in the first place. Good evening, Gerald.
Hey, Bob.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Well, I'm here. I'm an hour in, and it looks like we'll have another archive tonight, so that's cool.
Well, great.
I did find out this evening a little bit of West Virginia news, and, you know, you being a fellow hillbilly. I found out that I've got a meeting to go to January the 5th.
Oh, really?
Yes, because my county's Board of Education is trying to institute a moment of silence every day at school.
You know, when I was a kid, I remember something like that in our county. And I remember it didn't live very long.
Well, I already know what I'm going to say. I'm just going to stand up and say, listen, any of you who vote for this deserve to be impeached and removed from office immediately because of a breach of your fiduciary duty to the county, because you're going to cost us tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees that need to be spent on our children, not on your weird religious fixations. I'm sure I'll be a big hit.
Oh, yes, I'm sure of that.
I wish I could be a fly on the wall there.
maybe I'll take a fly in my pocket.
That would be cool.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
You're going to be a hit, Bob. I'm sure of it.
Well, thanks. Thanks kindly. Good evening, Devin. Or not?
I think he said he would be right back. Silent mode for now.
Okay. And good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker.
You're talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Yeah,
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I saw something that was just terribly, terribly cute today on social media. I saw a big picture of Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And it said De Niro. And then there was a picture below it of him in the distance, and it said DeFaro.
I like that.
I'm easily amused. What can I say?
I'm easily amused, too. My mother used to accuse me of that all the time.
So, we have reached the end of the week. How's yours been?
I've had 5 days of work and being paid. This is good.
Don't know quite what it feels like, huh?
I could get used to it. The whole living indoors, eating 3 squares a day thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Not bad. Not battling your brother and sister Hootervillians for the possum in the road.
Hey, I might be old, but I'm quick. I can get them.
Well, the possums are slow. It's the children of the corn that you have to look out for.
Oh, the children of the corn are pretty messed up, so they're pretty quick, too.
Yeah, that was messed up, not messed up.
That's what I said.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You know why there are no white lines on the streets here in Hooterville?
Because they done snorted them?
They done snorted them all up. I see you've been here.
Yeah, we got some lineless roads in West Virginia, too.
I understand perfectly. Hey, listen, did you see, real quick, did you see Geraldo Rivera mouthing off about LeBron James?
No, tell me no.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Cleveland Cavs have been wearing, during the warm-ups, they've been wearing those T-shirts that say, I can't breathe,
right?
Well, Geraldo went on and said, LeBron James' shirt shouldn't read, I can't breathe, but rather, be a better father.
Oh, really, Jerry Rivers? Really?
Says Geraldo Rivera, who has 5 kids by 4 women.
Oh, God.
Oh, the irony.
Oh, the goddess just decided to camp out over at Jerry Rivers' place.
The same Geraldo who gave away critical locations on the news while embedded in a rock. Be a better journalist.
You know, I almost thought there was some hope for him, Carol, because I saw a story a couple of weeks ago where he had said something with which the cranky nonagenarians of the Fox viewing audience did not agree, and they jumped on the web on the interweb tubes and started calling him mean things, and he said something like, "Wow, I've got a lot of assholes for viewers."
Yeah, well, you know, a clock, even a stopped clock, is right twice a day.
Sadly, yeah.
The law of averages was going to catch up, that he was going to say one same thing, but then, you know.
Oddly enough, he's still silent on the Duggars.
Says the man who has five kids by four women.
Right.
Sorry, I have to add that in when he wants to talk about fatherhood.
Precisely, yeah. No. Hypocrisy, thy name is Rivera.
Is Fox.
I'm sorry, I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here.
And the other thing, too, Hornistas?
That's me.
No, Horndenistas. It has a certain Reagan-esque kind of je ne sais quoi.
Oh.
Well, I think we've got the gizmo line back up and running for whenever Bill wants to try again.
Okay, cool.
Sergi, are you back?
I just re-added him.
Oh, okay.
You have some problems.
Tough crowd. Well, like I said, there was always the possibility that this could get a little bit creepy. I learned of a new story this evening. Oh, wait. Ah, we finally have Bill. Hey, Bill.
Good evening, good evening.
How in the world are you? Sorry it took me so long to get this right.
Relative to what, Bob? It's the old joke. It's been a good day. I'm still breathing, you know? What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. Above the ground.
Yeah, well, thanks to a couple of Warren family members, I'm still here. It was about a year ago when I almost took the tubes.
It was about that, yeah.
Because of one guy hitting the cops over here, I was able to break the thing before it hit me. So, my memory is faulty, Bob, but remember, I'm trying to remember and think about so many damn different facets of the civilization I live in, a nation I live in, that it becomes rather difficult. Football players from 1955 are, you know, like all this talk about people putting the hits on somebody to take them out of the game. George Halas had a hit on a guy named Bobby Lane, Detroit's quarterback. The guy he paid to do it blew the whistle on. So that's, you know, sometimes, Bob, I just get the feeling there isn't much new anymore. It's just recycled BS, you know. But anyway, that's my side of the story. Continue there. I enjoy the people that are on this line. There's one hell of a lot of brains going on the other side. I appreciate that.
Indeed, indeed. Now, what I was going to say a minute ago is that there was always the risk that we would run into some, come on, it's the horn, so... Carol, in particular, Carol, you or anyone else for that matter, does the name David Hooks hold any resonance for you?
Yeah, it's something I heard years ago.
I'm sorry, Carol.
I said right off the top of my head, no.
This is another police story. It goes back to September the 24th, but it is a continuing story. David Hooks was a construction contractor. Note the use of the past tense and consequently the fact that this is going to be an unpleasant story. He was a construction contractor who had clearances to work, you know, doing construction work on military bases. Apparently he was doing pretty well for himself. He had a 200-acre place out in East Dublin, Georgia. Now, there's the second clue, Georgia. Amazingly, David Hooks was a white guy. On September the 24th, he and his wife were... What's the poem we read this time of year, say, just settling down for a long winter's nap? You know, I and my kerchief and mine are kept.
It was the night before Christmas.
Yeah, well, not quite. It was September the 24th and not December.
Oh, okay.
Was that the drug raid?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, the not a drug raid.
Yeah, the not a drug raid.
The day before, September the 23rd, some asshole had come by and burglarized their home and burglarized their car. And was apparently a tweaker, who then flipped out and ran to the cops, so the story goes, and dropped the dime on David Hooks. You know, from the sound of things, I figure this guy is probably a rock-ribbed conservative Republican. Had guns in his home. But the operative thing here is that the day before, they had been burglarized. So late in the evening, like, you know, 11-ish, Mrs. Hooks, he's already gone to bed. Mrs. Hooks is getting ready to go to bed. She looks out the window and sees a car pull into their driveway. People get out of it and come running for the house, and she hollers to tell him, the burglars are back. He retrieves a firearm, in this case a shotgun. The cops, it's the cops, it turns out, the SWAT team, in fact, they come barreling through the door, no knock, and put him on the ground and execute him. Their excuse was that they commanded him to drop the shotgun, and when he didn't, they shot him, but it turns out that he was shot while he was laying on the ground. In the back of the head. And, you know, they've lawyered up. And, well, Mrs. Hook says, initially, I thought I was going to die. I thought I was going to be shot. I thought a gang had broke in. And up until I heard the radios and the dispatch radios, I had no idea. They forced Mrs. Hooks to sit outside in handcuffs for 2 hours while they carted out her husband's dead body.
Jesus Christ.
She went on to say, our community has supported us for the most part, and we really appreciate that. I think there's been a misconception of us being anti-law enforcement. And that's not true. We realize there has to be law enforcement, and we respect law enforcement, but this was wrong. Why do, and I guess this is sort of the philosophical question that's around, why does she have to say that? Because, you know what, if you blow through my door and you kill somebody I love, I'm going to be pretty anti-law enforcement. I admit it. I am.
Okay, I think I'm finally here.
Hello, Sergi.
Good evening, Bob. As for you, Duncan, I'd like to order half of y'all's rain, please, on the double.
But so her lawyer, the family's lawyer, went on and said, we hope that the district attorney will take all of this into consideration and take this case before the grand jury and do it in a manner where the grand jury hears everything, not just the officer's side of the story. And when I read that, I went a little nuts. Because, see, and this is more grand jury talk, it is not the grand jury's job to hear only the officer's side of the story. In fact, it would be the district attorney's job to go in and tell the victim's side of the story, to tell it one-sided, just tell what the cop, but no. So, Merca, hell yeah, right?
Hell yeah. Bob, I can't get my mind off of Tamir Rice. And I just can't get away from it. Because I had guns in the front yard when I was a kid in the suburbs. It wasn't the inner city. And I also remember being stopped by the cops once. We were kids, and we staged a fake fight in the street. And one of the neighbors called the cops on us. And I remember they took each one of us aside individually to get our stories. I guess that's the technique they do, you know, do the stories. Anyway, they let us go. I would never have been. I remember, I had my BB gun one time. I was sitting out front of the house. This is in a suburban neighborhood. And the folks had the house number in glass letters. It was actually posted to a oak tree we had there in the front yard. Anyway, I used the gun to shoot out those letters. And I don't know. I just can't get Tamir out of my mind. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't think you should apologize. The problem is the number of people who can't get trying to explain away the slaughter of people like Tamir Rice out of their minds. That's the problem.
I think it's got me a little tired out these last couple of weeks. I know I'm sitting here safe and sound in the suburbs, you know. You know, I did want to... I mentioned Buffy San Marie and a lecture she has. It's given at the Simon Ortiz and Labrolia Center on Indigenous Land, Culture, and Community. And I think that's Arizona State University. Anyway, it's Buffy San Marie, and the it's on YouTube. It's called Detoxifying Aboriginal Self-Perception and Outward Identity with Buffy San Marie. And, man, that is a good talk. It's been a while since I looked at it. There is a professor who speaks at too much length at the beginning, so I just scroll through that because the whole thing is almost an hour and get to Buffy. And, you know, I'm trying to listen at this point, Bob.
I understand, and I was actually going to go in a slightly different direction because we haven't dealt with this in a while. Everybody remember the Hobby Lobby decision?
Of course.
Yep.
Remember how the wise Solons and Hammurabis and Moseses of the Supreme Court said that was a limited, narrow decision with little impact on anything else?
Bullshit.
It just got real unnarrow again.
Yeah.
It keeps getting unnarrow.
This seems to open a floodgate.
Well, yeah, that's what it's turning out to be. The dateline on this story is today in Minneapolis. It is a federal district court judge. You know, this isn't some little pissant justice of the peace magistrate type. This is an Article III judge clothed with all the power and dignity of the courts and a lifetime appointment and a job he cannot get fired from, for all intents and purposes. Remember how Hobby Lobby was a narrow decision because it was a closely held corporation and you know, because they had deeply held religious beliefs, yada, 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 right?
Yes. Go ahead.
Enter Doug Erickson. Doug Erickson has closely held religious beliefs that says that none of the women folks that's working for him should ever have any contraceptives or IUDs what is paid for by his insurance plan. Doug Erickson is a car salesman. He's not selling friendly, Bible-believing, upstanding, God-fearing crafting supplies. He's a car salesman. He told KARE television, "It's long been my conviction to run these businesses according to my faith, and I really believe I'm stewarding these businesses and operating them as God would have me operate them." Really? Anybody ever work in the car business? Anybody got any idea what the markup is on a used or a new car?
Oh, it's 20.
And here's is this guy a used or a new salesman?
I don't have that, Sergi. I've just Hastings Automotive.
Because let me go ahead and tell you, if you are a used car salesman, I mean, I've never bought a car, but I've seen how sleazy they can be, not just with the markup, but, oh, yeah, sure, this car runs wonderfully. You drive it off the lot, and next thing you know, the transmission's been blown halfway to Australia. So,
yeah.
Oh, well, he's covering all bases. Go ahead.
I'm in the car business. I sell used cars. I'm one of those sleaze bags.
I didn't say
Except we have a very, very different policy where I work. And when there's a car there that's iffy, it's priced to be iffy. And if some guy comes in and says, I want this car for my daughter to drive back and forth to college, I tell him no.
Yeah.
I would not put my daughter in this car. This is a car for somebody who is mechanically minded, who wants to get the car truly roadworthy. It drives, but this is not a car for your daughter to go back and forth to school.
Yeah, but you're one of the exceptions, though. You're one of the exceptions.
Well, no, let's not even go there. Let's not even go there. Let's not talk about exceptions and rules. Let's talk about this on level ground.
But Hastings Automotive sells new and used cars.
Yes, I've got them right here. New Fords, new Chryslers, new Jeeps, new Dodges, new Ram trucks, as well as used vehicles. That's not my point. My point in sharing that quote was his idea of saying, I'm running a car lot according to Christian biblical principles.
Well, I'm too old to breed, but my boss is pretty unconcerned with my virginity and my ability to sell cars.
Which is where I was going. What does having what does running a Christian biblical car lot have? What does God need with a spaceship? There's our second obligatory Star Trek reference of the night. If you're U.S. District Judge Norman Olson Plotts in Minnesota, where is that line?
There's eight more cases in Minnesota getting ready to go before that very judge.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, I was driving down through West by God to Winston-Salem, and we had a wholesaler down there, and we'd buy three cars because I could tow one back, my buddy could drive one back and tow another one, and my friend was a good body man, and he could clean those things up well, and we'd make $1,000 a car. That was a little sideline to the music business, you know, because I would do the mechanical, my buddy would do the body, but it's a shady business, there's no doubt about it.
What?
I mean, it just depends who you're dealing with.
Yeah, but in capitalism, any business can be a shady business. You know,
yeah.
A cupcake store can be a shady business in capitalism.
Well, with cars, it's that damned loan stuff, that loan companies and loan sharks, and that's where the real problem can be. It's out of the hands of the salesman. It's whoever, the money changers, you know, the guy is easy to like so much.
Right, and thus my question, what does an automobile dealership have? And I really want to take this away from the ethics of car dealing, because my grandfather was I ran into a 90-year-old guy in the biscuit world a week or so ago who told me about buying cars from my grandfather.
Oh, man.
Okay, sure could sell a car, he said. And I never got to meet my grandfather. He was dead before I was born. But everybody talked about what a genial fellow he was, and how he loved cars and how he could sell cars. One story that comes down to us is of the time that the woman came in and Carol, you probably know what this process is about, came in and factory ordered an automobile.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you say, I don't want one off the lot. I want one built for me with exactly what's on it that I want and what ain't that ain't.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, you know, she put the money down. Her money was good. And they went over the paperwork. And she was most explicit in explaining to my grandfather that, and it was a Mercury, it was a Ford and Mercury dealership. She was quite insistent on the fact that she wanted a two-door. And 6 weeks later, the day arrives, it's on the lot, it gets rolled off the truck, it's beautiful, it's all the bright color, the interior, knobs, bells, whistles, and she says, they got it wrong. And my poor grandfather was flummoxed. What's wrong? I mean, this is the engine you wanted, you know, you wanted the big V8, blah, 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 blah. She said, I wanted a two-door. And he said, it is. And it was a lovely Mercury coupe, and she said, no, two doors on each side.
Oh, holy cow.
Dude, that's just too much.
You know, to get a Tesla, you got to pretty much factory order it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But the and someday, Sparky, someday. By the way, I saw a survey coming out of New Zealand that 85% of, something like 85% of New Zealanders said they would drive an electric car if an electric car was the same price as a gas engine automobile, which was kind of, well, I guess, surprising. But anyway.
Well, wow, but the kid, there was already driving a Baker Electric. I mean, this thing was ancient, but she was ancient, too. And I'd see this thing sitting around East Cleveland when I lived there. Well, East Cleveland was livable. Because to me, the whole thing, I have a lot of my aides. And I talked to them, and they're shocked. They say, I never met a white guy like you before. I said, well, you know, I was lucky. I grew up in the right neighborhood, and, you know, I had a different idea. But we should have electric cars, but as long as it's the same thing as the coal boys. The petroleum, the energy producers will keep us, you know, as long as they can get that. How long is there going to be oil in the ground? I don't know. So what the hell are they going to do until
I'll tell you what shocked me today. I looked over at the AMPM when I was leaving Home Depot, and the price was under $3 a gallon in California.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Sparky, I just paid $2.25 a gallon to fill up in Hooterville.
Oh, yeah, one of Channel 8's reporters tweeted a picture last night where he found the gas station in Dallas that was selling it for $1.99.
Jesus Christ.
Because in California, we have federal taxes and state taxes on our gas. That's what keeps our interstate system going.
Yeah, even here in West Virginia, Sparky, we pay, I think, 57 cents per gallon in taxation between state and federal taxes on gas. But we're at $2.80 a gallon or so. But just to kind of redirect back to where I was going, it's this business of this and now I guess it's enshrined in law, and that's the inquiry. Where do we go now that this is enshrined in law that a car dealership, a bakery, a craft store, all of these profit-making enterprises are now Christ-centered, religious, Christ-driven enterprises? I mean, I know we talked a lot about this when Hobby Lobby first broke, but now it's gathering steam, and it's not going to be just about the Affordable Care Act. So does this, I mean, I don't understand the meaning of it. Does this guy want more pregnant female employees?
No, he doesn't want any female employees.
Because this kind of goes, back to John Stossel talking.
Some car dealerships around here.
I was just going to say, this kind of goes back to what John Stossel said a little bit ago about how women are smarter because, you know, they take time off to have their families. That's why they get paid less.
what they want us to do, go back to the women having the baby in the field and then getting out and working the plow or what? What the hell are these guys' brains? Or anything?
There are two rooms in the kitchen in which a woman should, or two rooms in a house in which a woman should live according to the right-wing mindset. The kitchen,
the bedroom,
and
the
bedroom. And she, and well, three, she gets to clean the bathroom, too.
Excuse me for a second.
That was my job when I was married, Bob.
There was something in the news lately about some state or somewhere, some guy said he was, wouldn't allow women to work anymore that were pregnant. Did anybody else hear something like that?
I don't know. I did see the story coming out of Montana that they had passed official legislative rules to prevent the women legislators from dressing all slutty.
I saw that, too. Only the women. Check your skirt length. Check your cleavage.
Oh, my kingdom applies to the legislator.
To the media as well. I think it applies to everyone. Well, women. All the women folk in the on the floor.
Yeah, I didn't say just the media. I meant the legislators.
That's what I meant. You said legislature.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It applies to staffers and everybody.
My kingdom to work in that place, because let me go ahead and tell you, me being a dude, I'd say, oh, you didn't pass any rules about dudes? Okay.
Oh, no, they did. They passed rules about dudes. Dudes cannot wear their blue jeans.
Does it only mention jeans? Can I, if I work there, could I walk in and, like, you know, really, really flamboyant, like, boy booty shorts or something?
No. It all has to be business attire.
Where is this, in the Congress?
It's in the Montana State Legislature.
Oh, well, yeah. Fuck them. Really?
I think that's a first for Larry.
Speedo and a tie.
A speedo and a tie. Now that's my kind of attire, but only if you take if you forget the tie.
Well, on your show, Bob, I think I've heard him say it before, late night.
Oh yeah, Larry said that plenty of times before late night, but I don't think he's ever said it on the air.
Well, that's what I meant on the program itself.
Oh, you know, that's the only way to reasonably deal with a lot of the stuff that's coming down from the right wing and the way in which the culture. Nobody ever thought, even with Reagan in office, that things would get this bad and that the culture would become lunatic like this. But if this stuff is going to keep on going on, that's the only rational response. You know, I'm sorry, you can't deal reasonably with a bunch of idiots that look like they're coming over to steamroll you. It's like asking trying to play nice with, you're coming in to play a football game against a team you know that if you give them every break under the sun, they're going to steamroll you 120-0, and you're still sitting there trying to give them breaks. I think the Democrats and the liberals and progressives in the society should stop giving these right-wing idiots breaks. Look at what's happened. We've talked about this before. Of course, nothing that I say is going to go anywhere, but that's just how I feel. I'm tired of giving these idiots credibility. It's about time to just be as knuckleheaded or knuckle-dragging on our side as they are on their side. That may not be smart. It may not be healthy for people's brains, but sorry.
State of Jefferson update. On January 15th, there's like four counties that are rallying all their State of Jefferson people to go to the state capitol, and they're going to submit a petition to the Secretary of State and the Assembly and the Senate on their grievances for more representation.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. I have a...
Here's hoping they wear their house helmets and everything when they go out so they won't hurt themselves.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to fill a bus here where I live. Had an article in the paper. It only costs $47 for a ticket, I think.
Oh, hey, got a great note in from Sandra. Don't forget that women and their work needs to be devalued because male job loss is becoming untenable. #neoliberalism. Amen.
I wasn't kidding when I said they want no women in the workforce. This is how the right wing intends to resolve joblessness.
Oh, so now they think women are taking all the men's jobs.
Yes.
Yeah, what I was trying to say earlier is that we liberals and progressives try to use reason and common sense and rationality to persuade people of our point of view. We try to take all points of view into consideration. We try to weigh everything. We try to look at the merits of each little thing. Well, in this culture today, it doesn't appear that most of the conservatives, at least those that are being trumpeted on the media as speaking for Republicans or speaking for conservatism, do any of that. And they just strong arm their way and sledgehammer their way through. And they've done that to this culture for 35 years. And it's time for it to stop. I'm sorry if I sound like I'm inflexible or like I'm being unreasonable, but that's...
You don't have to apologize for that kind of thing around here, Larry. This ain't Berkeley.
Larry.
You know, when Title IX came along, they had to open up all the different trades in the military that didn't involve combat to women. And the same thing happened to the labor unions. They had to allow women to apply to their apprenticeship programs.
Well, we're going backwards. And I understand people being avaricious, you know. I mean, people are just human beings. But it's this the hypocrisy of it is what gets to me, because the Supreme Court says, oh, this is only going to apply in this one little case. And everyone knows they're lying when they say that. I mean, I don't know which justice it was that said, well, this is just one narrow little case. Did that come from the court itself?
Oh, Bob.
Yeah, right here.
I yelled people out of the room.
Oh, no, not at all.
No. I'm trying to understand. See, when I worked 15 years locally as an activist in my city, it was land use issues having to do with the neighborhood. And all that matters is power. That's all that matters, power. I got a constituency during that period, people who wanted me to speak for them. So I felt what it was like to have power. And it's raw power. And so in my brain as a person, I remember when Planned Parenthood was on a U.S. postage stamp. And those days are over.
Planned Parenthood was on a stamp?
Really? Yes, it was. Absolutely. You can look it up on the web.
Good.
And I remember.
Have regressed.
Pardon?
I said, good grief, have we regressed?
Yes, exactly.
Right,
and
lose their crap if they try to put that on the map now.
It's right there at the Supreme Court, and of course it's in Congress, and then you've got the president. So, that was Larry saying about how progressive people are too kind and generous and thoughtful, and we want to consider everyone. That was you saying that, Larry?
That was my comment, and that was a reactive comment. It wasn't we're not supposed to be acting from the reptilian brain or the amygdala, but I find myself, even as a progressive, and mostly as progressive, acting with the reactive mind, which isn't really antithetical to anything progressive. But in this day and age, maybe it's important to engage my amygdala and be reactive. I don't know.
Larry,
where you are.
The reptile brain is advertising. That's all it is. And I don't understand why we don't, the Republicans understand this very well. And we did one great ad, the Lyndon Johnson ad, where we had Goldwater dropping the H-bomb on a little girl with a flower. Do people remember that one?
The Daisy Girl ad.
Oh, yes, Lance.
Didn't that go a long way toward winning the election for Johnson?
No, it only aired once.
It's in my brain. Yep. I don't know why.
Well, that's an early example of something that didn't air, but the media turned it into a thing.
It was viral.
Yeah.
We've got to do more of that.
Well,
it's not fair.
Well,
it's not...
Carol and I were talking a couple nights ago. I hope you don't mind my mentioning, Carol, that we had an hour and a half long discussion after the show.
Not at all.
And we talked, and Carol was explaining to me about how the John Birch Society had been working for 50 years for this moment. They've been working, and they've been able to capture the entire collective mindset. Well, you know, not everybody in America, but they've certainly been able to influence the culture to such an extreme that these people that would have been considered absolute nuts in the 60s, and nobody would have, most people wouldn't have even considered their belief system to be valid or to have anything or to be credible. Now consider this, that this is considered to be, what do they say now, the new normal? Is that what they say?
It took them from 1964 to 2010, but the John Birchers finally got to the mainstream, because let's be abundantly clear here: the John Birchers, the Tea Party, is indistinguishable from the John Birch Society.
Amen. Bob, I saw a lot of those guys. I heard them lecture, and I got a good laugh out of it. If I'm not mistaken, John Birch was a CIA operative in China that was killed by the communists. I'm thinking that's where his name came from.
The namesake, yeah, but it was, of course, started by a guy named Welch, Robert Welch, who...
Robert Welch is a newspaper publisher.
And he got going with a humongous infusion of cash from Pappy Coke, who was angry because he got stiffed by Stalin when he went over to do some oil work for him.
Oh, I didn't know that. I always thought that Robert Welch was part of the Welch Candy Company, or the Welch Grape Juice, or the Welch Grape Jelly Fortune. I didn't know that, Bob. I didn't know that was the genesis of Pappy Coke being pissed off and giving money to the John Birch Society. I didn't know that at all. Thank you.
And interesting observation coming in from Randy in PA. He says, you can give all the money and time you want to liberal organizations. Just a few conservative judges can thwart all your efforts. And news,
absolutely,
Republican politicians appoint conservative judges.
That's right.
I want to back up for just a minute. Observation coming in from Tamara in San Diego. Don't know how you can describe this on the radio, she says, but if I were a man, I'd be killing off those sacred sperm with tight pants business wear right now. This is good. And I take the point. Modern business attire, I mean, I know this because we went suit shopping for Ferg a year or so ago. And have you seen like modeling photos of men's suit, young, especially young, youngish men's suits now?
Sure.
I mean, the trousers are practically football pants, and that's not a statement about anybody's. No, it's just they're really snug, and yet at the same time, yeah, that's business attire for a man, but a woman's got to make sure she's not wearing them, you know, those clothes.
Hey, if I were those women in the Montana legislature, I would go out and get as everybody wear a burqa. That'll blow their minds.
Good one, Carol.
Well, and
there we go.
Yeah, and that's a sort of guerrilla approach to it. But remember, it's Montana. So, you know, how many women were involved in the drafting of it to make sure?
None.
Really?
They were not consulted. It got laid on their desks. The men dreamed this up.
Well, that's just beautiful.
But not a bit surprising, right?
Well, I just wonder how many good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian women there are who agree that, you know, we've, you know, got to come to work in a burqa.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many female legislators there are that can put on a pair of good hard boots with a steel toe with a point on it and go up there and kick every son of a gun. Anyway. Never mind. Anyway. Sorry.
Bob, back to the John Bergers.
Yeah.
There is a book. I interviewed the author. She was one of my last interviews that I did on my radio show. Her name is Claire Connor, and she wrote a book called Wrapped in the Flag. Her father was a national spokesperson for the John Birch Society for more than 30 years, and her mother was a staunch follower. So she was in the room at the birth of all of these meetings to form this. And you were absolutely right. The Tea Party has really embraced their most kind of virulent policies. But she got away from it, and she understood how really sick it was. She wrote an amazing book that wrote about the history of the John Birch Society. I have the book. She sent me an advanced copy before it even came out. I've got it. If anybody wants it, all they have to do is let me know, and I would gladly mail it to them. It's a great read.
I'd be interested in reading that, because there was a book that really got me interested in the history of the religious part of the Tidy Righty Wing, and it's called the Theocons. So I'd be interested in such a read as well, because, I mean, just, you know, how this whole crap fest became to be, you know, it's like a twisted curiosity for me, you know.
Send me your address, Sergi, and then pay it forward and share it with the next person.
I will. Let me see this. Okay, let me see.
Is the book still in print?
Yes, it just came out last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was just published in March of 2014. I had an advanced copy a year before that.
So the Theocons and the Theocons book, that's available too, Sergi, right? I can get that. I mean,
I checked it out from the Fort Worth Library, and that's where I read it. I just saw the book on the shelf while I was browsing. I was like, oh, this thing seems interesting. And I pulled it out, and it basically, I ended up checking it out. It's a very good book. Basically tells the entire story of how the religious right wing of today came to be. And believe it or not, it has its roots in 1960s counterculture, which blew my mind.
That's correct.
Well, Lance, you know, it's interesting because back when I was in the Crippled Children's Home in Desert Hot Springs, which is down by Palm Springs.
Yes.
Called Angel View.
I go past it frequently.
Go past what?
Angel View.
Oh, you know that place.
Joshua Tree.
Okay, well, that's a group home. In any case, there were people there. When I first moved there, I was depressed, obviously, because I didn't want to be away from home and all that. So these people what you just heard. There were orderlies there, and they were trying to convert me to Jesus, because the Jesus movement was happening at that time.
Yes.
And these people were originally from, you know, Orange County and what have you, and that was their way of protesting. Instead of going left and protesting against the war, they went the other way. So now you can take up the story from, I don't know whether it has the roots in that particular movement of the storefront preachers that came to San Francisco to save drug addicts or not. Why don't you take the story from there?
Well, I just wanted to say, the book I'm reading now is called The Reactionary Mind by Corey Rodin. And it shows clearly that reactionary people assimilate the tactics of their liberal opponents. And that's what happened when you say the Tea Party came out of the 60s, because my PhD dissertation is on the San Francisco Mime Troupe and its social context. And they are a communist agitprop theater. And the people on the right, that whole 60s thing, which I was a part of, you know, that's my life we're talking about, that disturbed them so much that they felt they had to take up the tactics of guerrilla theater. And, you know, the trials and Jerry Rubin and all those people.
Lance, do you think that Rush Limbaugh took up the tactics of the Firesign Theater?
Well, I'm not a good one to consult on Rush Limbaugh because I just cannot stand his voice. So I don't have an objective assessment, and I can't stand what he talks about, what he says. So you put those two together, I can't give you an. I was near Sacramento when he started his career, so I have some vague memory of hearing him then, and you know, him putting together these satires against liberal people. You know, he did that because liberal people put against satires against conservative right-wingers. That's why he did it.
Yeah, Bernie Ward was saying, and by the way, Bernie Ward's getting out of prison before Christmas, and he was a well-known liberal talk show host here in San Francisco on KGO.
He said
that Rush actually treated him well. But in any case, I just have to say that those two disc jockeys, you know, Morton Downey Jr. And I have to say that when I saw him on cable, his show out of New Jersey, I couldn't believe what I was watching. And I said, is this what our culture is coming to? So then after that, you have all of these talk shows. And I know we're getting off the topic, but all of these talk shows that are based upon, that came out of, they weren't a consequence of what Phil Donahue was trying to do with his show at all, but somebody decided that this kind of shock TV and shock radio stuff would work, and it was just mind-blowing. It was absolutely mind-blowing. So what I was talking about is not necessarily what he talks about, but what he tried to do with the style of his show. Anyway, all right, I'm going to let you go, let you continue with what you were talking about, Lance.
Well, I'm complete. I mean, I can go on about talk radio and this whole performance thing at some length. So I have a name somewhere in my notes that I wanted to give to Bob, and I can't find it. He's this guy, they call him the father of all this, and he's like, I've heard him a couple times. He does this weird mental thing. He's the one who paid for Rush Limbaugh and all these people.
I know that. He's the guy who taught him to walk and talk and act just like a bloom. Yeah.
Exactly. And we will now go into our mental state. And, beloved, we can heal that, you know. And then once in a while, they'll say, oh, but by the way, it's the Bible, you know.
Yeah.
He's one of the weirdest acts I've ever heard on talk radio. And I don't hear him right now, but... Larry, I sit out in the desert in my trailer, and I take my AM radio and pick up KGO and every other damn thing I can, you know?
Ben, you've been everywhere, haven't you, Lance?
I'm getting up there, you know. I've had, Larry, my life has been so bitchin'. I mean, you know, and that you, we tend to get happier as we get older, and that is happening to me. So I'm happy to be here as a member of the Horn.
And that is happening to me.
Hey, Paula, you'll have to mute.
Okay. I'm muted.
We don't need to see your video either.
Yeah, just go audio only.
Throwing it back to the host.
Well, that's what Friday on the Front Porch is about. There is no host.
Oh, well, I see. Radio, God, how can you talk about it? I began as a little boy listening to talk radio late at night. I used to listen to Captain Carrot, and he opened his show with the sound of a carrot crunching. And I'll just never forget that. So, and I thought, you know, maybe I want to do that, but I'm not very loquacious. I'm more a person who does scripts.
And I'm one of those people that grew up with radio, too. And that's what makes one into a radio creature in a lot of the time. I had an AM radio beside my bed as a kid. And so when I got old enough to get a job and all the really cool jobs at McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King were taken, I wound up reading the news at a gospel radio station. I mean, the other night, Monday Night Football on the 8th, they ran the clip because it was the anniversary, of course, it was the 34th anniversary, hard to fathom, of the assassination of John Lennon. And they ran the clip on Monday Night Football of Cosell announcing the killing of Lennon. And it was like time travel for me because I was working that night.
Yeah.
And I, somewhere out in... all the stuff I've got. I hate the new Skype interface, by the way. I've got the wire copy from that night. And I bet the ink isn't even completely faded from it yet. Of the UPI copy on that yellow UPI, great big iron lung teletype machine. I saved it all.
That's great. I have a poem, and I also have a copy of the Rolling Stone issue with John and Yoko.
Well, what was fascinating about working that night was the fact that this is all sort of pre-computery, and there was a physical bell, you know, kind of like the bell at the end of the carriage return on a typewriter.
Yes. Right.
And depending on how serious something was, they would send a number of bells. And, you know, they sent bell, you know, there were bells for the test of the emergency broadcast system. There was a number of bells that they would send if a tornado, because this was Northwest Alabama, if there was a tornado bearing down. And of course, you were supposed to stay at your post and warn people about the tornado, you know, until you yourself got blown away. But they sent, I think, and the most bells they would ever send was 10, I think, if I recall correctly. And 10 bells was the Russians that pushed the button. and that's when you get out your. I mean, it's just like being on a submarine or something, or a B-52, Sparky. I mean, you got out your packet, and you had your code packet and your code authenticator, and you had to read it, and then there was a sealed manual that you would get out and begin to read the script. And they sent, I think, 7 bells for the assassination of John Lennon.
Wow.
And I broke in and I announced it on the air because, you know, I was 16 years old or whatever, or 17,
yeah.
16, 17. And I broke programming to announce the murder of John Lennon. And the next day, I was very nearly fired for it.
Well, for doing that?
Yeah, because John Lennon was a Satanist. John Lennon was an unsaved devil worshiper. John Lennon was an anti-American communist, filthy, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Well, carriage return.
Bob, I won't fire you for making me have visions of crawling around in a B-52 again.
Okay, but you know about those packets and envelopes, right?
Yeah. I know about a packet we smuggled to Guam in the 47 section of a B-52.
You know the interwebs work on packets and envelopes, too.
Bob, what's a carriage return?
On a typewriter.
Anybody want to take that?
I have my Hermes on my desk.
That's when the big thing on the typewriter finishes the line and goes ka-chunk back to the beginning.
Right. You hit the thing.
Oh, so it's when that big 2-beat thing that, like,
it's actually a roller, Sergi. That's how you roll the paper. Because back in the day, we had this stuff called paper, and you roll the paper into the typewriter.
It was a metal clip that you hit that made the roller go one deal, and then you pushed it all the way back across the other.
Yep. Typewriter's great for writing poetry.
Did you have typing in high school, Lance?
Not only did I have it, I was the best, even among the girls. And it's probably what made me a writer. I love to type. I mean, I just love it. And I still have my Hermes 3000. It's on the carriage desk return next to my PC. And use it on occasion. It's good for notes. It's good for some poetry. You know, Bob, it's such a thrill to see that even you, at your young, tender age, have lived from the switch from the analog to the digital environment.
Oh, yeah, and oddly enough, I did not have typing in high school, despite my mother's best efforts to get me to take it.
Yes.
And I said no, because the very thought of just sitting in there, because they were down the business wing of the high school, and if you walked past there, you just heard this monotonous drone of clackety 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 ding, clackety 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 ding. And the thought of being in there and doing that, it made me want to run screaming into the night. Because the business wing was also the same hall you walked down to get to the theater dressing rooms. And I was much more interested in doing the theater stuff. So later on, my mother had a typewriter at the house, and she was forever typing letters and blah blah blah. She'd been a postmaster at one point, so she was into it. And she said, well, you know, these are your home keys, ASDF, JKL, semicolon, and the whole purpose of touch typing is to just reach one finger, one finger, one finger. And lo and behold, when I went off to college, still, no luck getting me to learn typing. But when I went over to CNN and had to learn, well, I learned to type like a journalist used to learn to type. You know, there's a very famous photograph of Ernest Hemingway working on one of his short stories, and he's got his two little index fingers and they're poised above the keys. And I worked in a newsroom with a bunch of old news guys, and they all typed that way. And they all sat there and they banged away on, and by then it was computers, banged away on those computer keyboards like they were on the verge of being the last man to the helicopter in the Saigon Bureau. Because everybody had to produce a 5-minute newscast every hour.
Wow.
And so that meant going back and rewriting and retyping. And you know what? There's a lot of copy to 5 minutes of news. You'd be surprised. I mean, it's like this program. I took, I just did an experiment one evening, and I found out that, like, an hour of one of my filibobsters is somewhere between 30 and 60 pages of copy.
That's right.
Double-spaced. Because you got to double space it so that you can see it. Yeah.
So you can see it. So you can read. These days I type all caps, double spaced when I'm preparing a speech.
Bob?
Yes. Yeah.
Hello. Anyway, I do have a story about typing. When I was in school, we didn't have the manual typewriters, but we had electric ones, and these were the IBM Selectrics.
Oh, with the ball.
With the ball.
Yes.
And just imagine, okay, and you probably guess what this is about. Well, I did not realize that those would, when you released something would shoot up in the air. Well, somebody pulled a prank on somebody one time. It wasn't involving me, by the way. But one of the girls was starting, it was typing, and all of a sudden she started typing, and it just, choop, and it flew, that ball flew, and That was one of the quirks of the IBM Selectric typewriter.
Did it wound anybody?
No, nobody was hurt. No animals were hurt. No mice were hurt in the stunt. Nobody really got in trouble over it. It just no cops were called and anyone was added to the prison school to prison pipeline.
No SWAT teams.
No school resource officers. This is back in the early days of MTV.
What was the ball for?
Can I tell a story about a typing room I wired back in 1990?
You can do anything you want. It's a regular joint, Sparky.
Anyway, we were remodeling this old high school that was built in 1937, and it's down in Arbuckle, California, and it had asbestos in it, and it was under the floors, and it had a raised floor, and then an underfloor area that was some places maybe 3-4 feet high. But back on this one end of the classroom wing, it got really shallow. Well, in order to, they had to abate, asbestos abatement, they go in there and they had to dig, they tried to dig out the dirt underneath the old school to get the asbestos out of the dirt under the school, but they couldn't get it all. So what they had to do, they had to encapsulate it. So they poured like a stucco mix, pumped it underneath the classrooms, and then they used garden rakes to rake it out as they went back towards the access to get out of there. Well, it turned it into, you couldn't crawl over it. It was like putting ground glass under there. And anyway, we had to put floor boxes into this one classroom area. So we had to crawl under there. So the only thing we could do found all the cardboard from the light fixtures. We were able to string out like little paths to get back there, and you had to crawl on your back to get back there so the guy could put the floor box in there and then pipe it to the next floor box. And so we had cardboard spread all over there, but we made a deal with the insulators because they had to go underneath there. There was no insulation under the floor to bring it up to modern day standards. They had to go under the floor to insulate the whole thing. So they were going to pull the cardboard out as they insulated it. But that was when it was typing, it just come back to my mind. I mean, this was in 1990, and they still had the IBM Selectrics in there.
Yeah.
And they were teaching everybody to type at school. And they had, I guess they had, just the old manual typewriters in there before to teach people.
Well, I mean, got
when it was built in 1937, that was probably where you were at.
More analog typing, Sparky.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to share one last thought on this typing, at least from me anyway, if I may. They upgraded my Android tablet 2 days ago. I use tablets now, and I love them. Mm-hmm. And 2 days ago, a Google bar appears at the top of my tablet, and it's just on the, it's right on your homepage all the time. You can't get rid of it. So anyway, you tap it open, and it says, "Say OK Google." Oh, I just did. And now it's recording everything I'm saying. And so whatever you say, boom, it goes and finds it on the web. You don't have to type anymore. And it works, you know.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I didn't ask for it. There it is, the Google bar. You tap it, say, "Okay, Google," and then you say, you know, "Marilyn Monroe, best picks," you know, and then it takes you to Marilyn Monroe's best picks.
You know,
Siri does the same thing on the iPad.
Yep. So now it's on Android.
It's amazing. I never know from 1 minute to the next what's going to capture people's fancy, but typewriters did. And lo and behold, a note coming in from Robert in Australia. I still have my first typewriter. It's a Brother. It still works. Must see now if I can find a new ribbon. When I started working in IT, we used trays and traps of punch cards to load and run programs into the mainframe. The cards were pushed by the girls in the punch room using computer code handwritten on sheets of paper by the computer programmers. I was the last person at work who knew how to operate an IBM 1480 impact printer. So for 3 years, despite not working in that department anymore, I had to return once a year to print the employee tax certificates because the Australian tax office still used paper with carbon. See, it's amazing the number of people. I would guess that there's a lot of people out there to this day, or not to this day, but a lot of people out there now who don't even know what IBM stands for.
What does
or
IBM
what punch card is?
International Business Machines.
Exactly.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't even know IBM stood for anything.
Yeah.
I thought it was just IBM.
And it took a generation for people to stop referring to copiers as Xerox machines. And now Xerox, yeah, I mean, there's ads on TV. You know, we're Xerox, and there's not a copier to be seen in the damn thing.
We're logistics now.
I thought
yeah, kind of like, it's kind of like what Polaroid, the brand name of Polaroid is on everything except cameras now.
Yeah, well, they're another one. Hey, I got a stupid technical question that's way, way, way inside baseball for the Horn Skype Malloy chat group. You know, Skype sent through an update to its interface a few days ago. And now, let's see, Lance and Timothy and Carol have a red exclamation point in their box on my screen. And I have no idea what it meant. Someone tried to get into the conversation a little bit ago and was trying to send video. And I kept telling it, no, decline video, decline video, decline video, decline video. And when it was done, I got 3 exclamation points. Anybody?
Yes. What those mean is that anybody who has a red exclamation mark on their profile picture, basically it means that they don't have a version of Skype that's, quote, end quote, capable of group video. Because whenever someone who ain't quite aware of how the conversation here works tries to do video, it automatically checks everybody in the call and says, it asks their Skype version, hey, can you support group video? And if it's an old version, it can't. So they get that.
I'm on the iPad, and it automatically updates my Skype version for me.
Yeah,
so,
well, you show as an orange exclamation point on me because it's about doing video.
Yeah, all of my.
I thought it was because I say fuck a lot.
No. And the new version of Skype, you can do a video call with up to 9 people. It updated me the other day, and I was pissed on this computer. It's, all the other computers I got, it's already updated. It first did it on the laptop by using a man cave, and I went, what the hell is this?
Nice.
Hey,
okay. Well, I got my question answered.
Since we're going down memory lane here. I have a story. I don't remember where I read it or even heard it, but I'll try to try to share it with you. We saw the carriage return actually brought this to memory for me. And supposedly there was a college professor somewhere in the U.S. Had a liked to shoot 35 millimeter film, and had a canister of film, you know, the little plastic canisters, some people know, sitting on his desk. And this is recently, one of the students came up to him and asked him where his wife found those little tiny Tupperware containers.
That's where we used to keep our pot.
I was going to say, yeah, anybody who's ever been anywhere around, cannabis knows what those little things are.
Well, if you think about it, probably anyone born after 1990 wouldn't have a clue what it would be for. What they were originally for.
Well, I was born in 1992, so
never seen them.
I've got a whole black and white dark room in this house that my dad set up years and years ago.
Interesting.
And I used to operate it. When I first got out of the Air Force and majored in the GI Bill, I took photography so I could have something I already knew about that I could mess with. Because we've got a lot of old camera equipment. I've got a lot of old camera equipment around here.
Well, you know, not to sound
I can't use it now.
Well, not to sound all geezery or anything, but there's a hell of a lot to be said for learning to compose a shot on a piece of film.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And especially learning to compose with black and white. Because black and white opens so many doors for you, because you can process it yourself and you can learn how the entire thing works.
Learning to use an enlarger. I have an enlarger.
I have one too.
Still in working order.
I could never afford one.
Mine never did me any good.
I could develop film tank and all that stuff, yeah, and make contact prints. My mother had a 120 Kodak with a bellows lens, and it came out the front, and the 120 made a really good size contact print for photo logs in your family album, you know. But Bob, I'm gonna mention something. I worked at the Wall Street Journal, and a young guy came in. First name was Davis. He was a copy reader and then a slot man in the newspaper chain, and his last name was Kucinich.
Yeah.
So I've known Dennis since we were kids. I was supposed to play for his first wedding until he found out I didn't play polkas. And in Cleveland, you don't get married without a polka band. That's, you know, you got to.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, do you know the name Vermont Royster?
The who?
His name was Vermont Royster. He was the editor emeritus of the Wall Street Journal, and he was editor before all this right-wing insanity. He once published a letter, came from the editor emeritus, talking about how they used to grow pot in their dorm rooms at Harvard in the 1930s.
Yep, and that's been around
a long time.
I have a lot of respect for Barry Goldwater when he was on the late night talk show one time, and he's talking about how much reefer or marijuana there was in Arizona when he was growing up.
Uh-huh.
Dead lake there was. You know, it grows everywhere. It's a weed. It can grow anywhere you want it. I never grew it.
Yeah.
Once in a while, I'll still get a gift from a friend and work up one hell of an appetite, but not often anymore.
We need to work on that for you.
Well, it was a funny thing when you're playing music and you're soloing. I don't know how many people would agree with me. There's a time lag. And I could see the next note as big as a balloon before it came out of my creativity, you know. It's just that's why musicians love the damn stuff. My dad got busted with a pound of it in 1946, but luckily for him, his brother, my uncle, worked for the organization because he was a They called him the man with the golden hands because he could fix anything they wanted fixed. I remember going to his house and sitting on the floor were four or five SWAT machines he was working on for them. Yeah, technically, I inherited a little bit of it, not enough, you know. I inherited too much of my dad's proclivity for playing the damn stuff, you know. But anyway, that's enough for me. That's enough. I just wanted to speak to have an opinion about Dennis, because, Bob, I know you worked with him.
Yeah.
Hey, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Speaking about weed, anybody, I've seen on Facebook that you, budget bill that passed Congress, they have a deal in there where they turned around the legalization of weed in D.C. after the people voted it in.
It's in the omnibus bill.
Yeah. They're making it so that the people that speak, you can't have your way. So they're really taking their representation away from them.
That's what they do.
Well, Washington, D.C. is a pain in the ass if you live there for as a citizen of the city, you know?
Yeah, but they just voted to legalize marijuana, and now the Republicans want to take it away from them.
Yeah.
They did the same thing after gay marriage in D.C.
Yep.
And the gun situation, too, they did something and reversed that as well in D.C.
Well, D.C. versus Heller, the one where the rats completely... Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Where the rats completely reinterpreted the Second Amendment and pretended that the well-regulated militia clause just wasn't in there anymore. They did that. You're absolutely right. But also interesting in the Cromnibus, I don't know if anybody saw this, at the same time, and what's the status now? I mean, I got a little lost in it. You know, everybody was breathless last night on all the news outlets because the House had managed to pass it.
But it still has to pass the Senate, Bob.
Yeah, it hasn't gotten past the Senate yet, has it?
Nope.
No, they got a two-day window to do it.
Well, also tucked away, if I read this correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, also tucked away in the Cromnibus was a provision to allow Native American tribe. No, it wasn't a provision. No, okay, maybe I'm completely screwing this up. I see so much in any given day. No, there was a directive. There was a directive that went out to the Justice Department that told them not to hassle Indian tribes if they want to grow and sell weed on tribal lands.
That's in the L.A. Times today.
So I read that right.
Yeah, and the tribes are thinking about it. Apparently, some of the tribes are very conservative, and they're not so sure they want to do it.
Oh, some of them will do it.
Let's hope.
Up here, they sell. People go to the casinos to get cigarettes. Now they'll be going to the casinos to get marijuana.
That's right.
Well.
I was buying cigarettes from the Native American group up in upstate New York and paying $6 a carton for something that people around here are paying $40 for because of the state taxes. And of course, what they do with all the money is, give it away.
Well, the Indians can put their own tax on it.
Yeah.
They can buy it right from the supplier and not have to pay federal tax, state tax. Because they're like a sovereign nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they really get treated like a nation instead of like serfs, it would sure help us a lot and help them a lot. And, I have enough to feel guilty about the way African Americans have been treated, and the Native Americans get the same wonder. And believe me, at one time or another, immigrants to this country. Well, let's go back to New York City in the Civil War era and signs that said no Irish need apply. That was a prime, and we had a subversive squad working in Cleveland into the 60s. because we have a lot of Eastern Europeans who bring with them a lot of dislike for each other, you know.
Sorry. I interrupted. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, because you were just saying about cultures and people, oppressed people, and throughout history and today. Well, I'm in the process of applying for jobs. I'm a nurse in the federal VA system, and every single time, I think I've interviewed for about 10 jobs in the past month, and they asked me, one of the last questions is, are you culturally sensitive? And what experience have you had working or having experience with people from other cultures? And I say, I'm from New York City. But yeah. And I grew up with everybody from all around the world, and I'm very sensitive. You know, I have to explain myself. But I think it's interesting how the federal government's, on their list of questions to check off is, are you culturally aware? Are you culturally sensitive? I think that's really quite interesting.
Simple answer. I'm not a Republican.
I won't get the job if I say that.
I know. The way I would answer that, I would say, I love my German Volk.
I have to say to Bill, I was taking courses, been taking courses the last couple semesters on immigration and film, and also minority groups, and also introduction to ethnic studies. So we've been studying the process of how various immigrant groups have, how people have been classified as they've come into the country, how they were looked at, how they've assimilated and acculturated, and who created the whole basic immigration scheme or how people were able to come to this country. They were first defined as how white they were or how white they could be, and then and then when they came here, I'm not saying this very succinctly. What I'm trying to say is that all immigrants were seen as in some way non-white, and in order to be able to be considered to be full citizens, they had to go through a process of assimilation and acculturation based upon a social construction system.
Right. White is a concept, not a color.
Right. That kind of thing.
Oh, and I want to put some thanks out real quick with 28 minutes to go in the program. Thank you, Alex, and thank you, Gwen. Thank you both very kindly. Between the two of you, we've got now that Tim answered Tom. And Alex and Gwen have answered Tim, and we've got $65 to go to finish off Tim's challenge to all the what's the word, Carol? We are Hornedanistas now.
Hornedanistas.
What are we serving?
What do you mean?
Well, a barista or whatever.
No. After Sandinista.
Oh,
I thought it was that we were servers of information.
No, that Tom started out calling us Hornistas, and Carol modified it to Hornedanistas because it sounds so much more threatening and anti-Reagan.
Oh.
And you never know when we're going to pour across state lines and invade Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, please do so.
How about horny baristas?
I really understand that.
Oh, toaster to Sergi. I mean, that was just perfectly placed.
Please do so and take me back. No, never mind. I don't want to go to West Virginia.
Hey Sergi,
send me off of California. Take me with you.
Early in the conversation, you were saying you wanted our water or rain.
We have been dry as a bone down here.
It's pouring.
Squeezing out all the moisture on the West Coast. And by the time the storms get here, over the last week, we've gotten these little, angel tinkle showers that
produce a trace or like 1/200th of an inch. It's like all the storms are dumping on y'all and not making it to here.
Oh, speaking of Texas, though, real quick, this being Friday on the front porch and being the end of the week and everything, we cannot let go by. I'm sorry. Like I said earlier, there is no host on Friday on the front porch, but I'm going to modify that to say that I am damned if I'm going to let Friday on the front porch go by without just sort of open season on Rick Perry's statement that there's no IQ test to be president.
He hopes.
Well, he'd be an expert at that. I wonder.
Well, compared to him, George W. Bush is a Rhodes Scholar. So, you know,
all you have to do is have people give you money.
That's pretty funny.
You know, money. If you can raise the money, the IQ doesn't matter. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, you're right, and. As I noted, because I first read of it on Carol's Facebook page, we need to be doing video here. We really do, because, see, it's really cute to watch. No, I'm not cute, but it's really cute to watch me point at Carol's icon on the Skype group on the laptop that's at a 45 degree angle to where I am. I'm pointing at you, Carol. It was on Carol's Facebook page, he said, pointing, that I first read that. And my thought on it is he's absolutely right. There is no IQ test to be president. The IQ test takes place in the voting booth.
And now Mitt Romney is getting ready for a run. That's all over the place now.
Oh, wait. He's changed. No. What? He's changed his tune?
Please.
I saw it today, 2016, and there's a picture of him smiling with his pearly whites going,
hi,
raring to go.
Hi, I'm
Mitt. Oh, yeah. Lord. Hang it up, Mitt.
I want to be your president.
No. Don't laugh. I mean, remember, Richard Nixon said, well, you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. And right. eight years later, baby,
yeah.
He was kicking us.
I saw on the internet today that Paiute Jindal's going to have a prayer meeting in the stadium to announce his candidacy for president.
Oh.
Well, you heard what Bobby Jindal said today, didn't you?
No, please. This has got to be good.
Oh, his kickoff run for president started by blaming the gays for Hurricane Katrina deaths.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I was shocked because I had not heard that George W. Bush and Michael Brown were gay, but if Bobby Jindal says so, must be true.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because you guys might be interested. Well, I mean, it might be at least salutary to realize that according to Liberty Council, well, let's let them speak for themselves. Stand by.
I just wanted to cite relation to something that was said earlier today in your program about promotion of homosexuality with U.S. tax dollars, citing Skousen, Skousen's book,
yes,
1958, yes. Naked Communist. Goal number 26 is to promote homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. And it says in the summary about that book, these are all part of the campaign to soften America for the final takeover. These are dangerous things that we're allowing to happen.
Yeah, Skousen has a lot of good writings, and in fact, he mentioned that many years ago, and here's where we are today. So, you know, this is when I say that same-sex marriage is the beginning of the end of Western civilization, it's that critical. And the other side just goes ballistic, I can't believe he's saying such things off. No, it really is. It's that serious. And that's why people need to wake up and realize how serious this issue is. We are in a clash of civilization, of worldviews, of unprecedented proportions.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Who was that?
Homosexuality is going to bring on the commie revolution.
Are you kidding? Well,
yeah. Let me make a note. It's the meme
we don't want our taxpayer dollars being used for this. That was co-opted from the anti-war movement. There was a whole movement, we don't want our tax dollars being used to pay for the war.
Right.
But I thought you guys, you all would be interested in knowing that all the Homer sectionals are going to make commies out of us.
So Lance, you're saying that the right wing, these right wingers took everything from the New Left playbook.
Not everything, but it's pointed out in this book I've been reading, What a Reactionary Mind. That this book studies reactionary conservatism, what do you want to call it, back to the French Revolution. And I don't have the mental capacity to relay it right now, but yes, one of their big things is they take over they're always trying to prop up what's gone.
They co-opt things for their own purposes. They'll co-opt and use anything they can for their own purposes.
Exactly. Thank you, Alex.
And now for something completely different. So you wake up on, say, Sunday morning, because we're heathens and we don't go to church, and you're hungry, and maybe you want to make breakfast in bed for that special someone. But you don't want to go to all the time-consuming trouble of putting on clothes. At the same time, you want to fry bacon, which notoriously can pop and sizzle and cause little grease burns if you don't have the common sense that God gave to buy one of those little round thingies that goes over your skillet that stops the grease popping.
I have many battle scars, frying bacon in the nude.
So for your naked bacon fryers this holiday season, the folks at J&D's, who also brought us bacon lube.
I don't think vegetarian.
Oh, wait. That's our first Betty Rebel giggle. Hi, Barbie. We're going to get in stereo one of these nights.
I swear, next week it's going to happen.
We now have, and I'm not kidding you, we talk about a lot of the things that have gone wrong in America along the way, and the abuses and the oppression and the repression and the suppression and the hate but, you know, thank you, American capitalism. Thank you. Because J&D's is now offering, and I'm not kidding, bacon crotch armor so that one can fry one's bacon without frying one's bacon.
No singeing of cubes.
No, fry your bacon without touching the sausage.
Hey, oh! There's a future in marketing for you, Sergi.
That was my question. How do I get a job in their marketing department?
Let me go ahead and tell you, I have so many battle scars from frying bacon in the nude. So something like that would work wonderfully for me.
You bragging?
Yeah.
No, I'm not bragging. I mean,
you want to know where the minds of the Horned Denistas go?
Right to the crotch.
Put a sock on it.
Randy and PA, don't let the torturers get any ideas about the bacon lube.
Okay. Sergi, I was looking for the book, the Theocrats book is. There's one, Attack of the Theocrats. Is that a?
I'll send you the ISBN number, Larry.
Okay, thank you. Because I found the other two, Wrapped in the Flag and The Reactionary Mind. found those.
So for the you know, for the person who has everything and who occasionally fixes you breakfast in the nude, and one presumes that it would be equally effective at preventing burns from, who knows, this could expand to frying skillet fried hamburgers at dinner time, not just breakfast, because I mean you can make an excuse for naked breakfast cooking. But this is real possibilities.
This is good if you're in a commune, you know, one of those places where people walk around naked. You know, there's a whole bunch of people. You know, they have little communes and little communities of people that like to be in the nude. This could be a fantastic thing for them. Buy in bulk, you know.
Jesus.
Well, there's a nudist colony down around 71, about 71 south of Akron. And I played twice for dancers out there. And I just told them point blank, you can pay me very well, which they did. But I'll be damned if I'm going to stand there with my clothes off and give you a cheap laugh, you know. It's, there's been there since 39. And luckily, there wasn't the original folks down there. They keep bringing in more people and, hey, God bless them. If that's what they want to do, do it, you know. None of my business. I got enough trouble of my own, thank you.
Can I change
Sorry about
the
subject? That.
No, sure. No. I want to know if these things come in different sizes.
I think
it might be good.
They appear to have elastic sides that are kind of Velcroable.
Oh. It ain't the sides that are different sizes.
But you said it's for the crotch. What about us females that have kind of something to cover on the top?
Virginia's?
Or male?
Virginia's.
No. Oh, no. You're talking about a bacon bullet bra.
Can I get one that says Kiss the Cook on it?
Speaking of...
Bob. Yes, Sparky.
Did you get the horn bumper stickers yet?
No, they have not as yet arrived.
Oh.
Otherwise, I would have been talking about them this evening.
Thanks, Sergi.
Well, I hope you get them soon.
I do, too. Lottie said that they should be arriving today. So that probably means that they'll be here tomorrow.
When you do get them... what are you going to do with them?
I'll offer them as some sort of a premium.
Okay. Just so people know, they're coming.
Yep. Hoyta bumper stickers, Morgan D. Hockey Pucks.
Can I do a shout-out to some people? I wouldn't do a shout-out for, but just to let people know, if you have a disaster... like I did, and some people come rolling in your neighborhood with a big trailer that says Kristen Relief Disaster Response, and they want to remove your carpets for free, you say, hell yes. Thanks to those guys, I got rid of all my carpets in my house. I don't know what I would have done without them.
Because that would have been a real... I mean, how far... Where's your nearest landfill?
Oh, it's on the other side of town.
And how would you have schlepped them there?
I don't know. My stepson's sick, and I didn't have a use of his pickup. It's not just schlepping them. It's getting them off the floor and getting them out of the house, moving all the furniture.
Sure.
There was a crew of about six guys coming here. I just had to be the overseer, and they just moved stuff, and they just ripped and teared, took the tack strip, everything out that I asked them to do, and got it outside, and then they were doing work for some other people in the neighborhood, and they had a trailer that came around, picked up all the carpet and everything, and schlepped it to the garbage dump.
Schlep. I love it.
Or whatever you want to call it. When everything was said and done, the guy looked at me, the head guy that come around and talked to me, because I told him right out, I said, I'm an atheist and I don't need you to be proselytizing to me or anything. I'm not going to go to church. I'm not going to do anything for your help or, you know. So at the end of the day, after they got the carpets out, he come around. I handed him $100 bill because he wanted some money to cover the dump charges. And I said, that ought to cover the dump charges for my house. Then he started proselytizing to me. So I
Oh, they finally got around to it, did they?
Had to sit there and listen to him. And I said to bite my lip, not say anything, because he was a nice guy, and they helped me, and I'll never have to see him again.
Yeah.
So I just said, okay. But it was only a couple minutes, and then I kind of gently shoot him away.
Sparky, on that same note, there's a kid that lives right around the corner for me who became, he's going to seminary, and he's very active in the local Baptist church here. And my lack of religion is no secret to anyone in Hooterville, you know, because I'm the she-devil. But he had a project at last year where he chose some senior citizens who had some repair needs in their house, and these kids went out and raised the money to effect the repairs and went and did all the work for these people. Well, unbeknownst to me, he put my name in this year. And out of the clear blue sky, I get a knock on the door. Some guy shows up and says, I'm from the Baptist church, and we're here to help, and I see that you've got some needs for your roof, and this deck has a problem, and if you don't mind, we'd be happy to come do it. And I said, okay, but I'm not going to come to your church. But, you know, I'm just going to be straight up about it, so if you don't want to do it, you know, that's okay. And he goes, we have absolutely no requirements, no expectations, no nothing. The day before they were scheduled to come, knock, knock, knock on the door. I opened the door, and they were like, what color do you want your house? And I was like, what? Yeah, we're going to paint your house, too. And I was like, really? Hmm. So he goes, yeah, go on the Home Depot website and pick out a color, and we'll get enough. We'll paint your whole house. And I was like, okay. What color do you want the trim? White. Because I had it was like this really ugly tan and it was a shit brown house. I used to call it the big turd on the lake. And they showed up. They had a crew of like 15 people, and they showed up. They cut out all those overgrown bushes around the house. They painted the house. They built a new, ripped off the old deck and built a whole new deck, rebuilt the steps on the side and made them safe for the first time since I've lived here, fixed the damage that the raccoons had caused on the roof. I have not had one leak in that roof since they fixed it. They painted the trim. It looked like a new house when they were done. And I mean, and they hauled everything away. And the only thing that they asked was that they pray, that I come out with them as they pray. And I, okay, if you want me to hear why you pray, pray. I don't care. And on the last day that they were here, they handed me a Bible with my name inscribed in gold letters on the front, and everybody signed it on the inside with their favorite Bible passage, and they said, this is a gift for you. And I thought it was very sweet. But
God bless them. You know, maybe that was Satan. Maybe you sold your soul to the devil for all that work and you didn't know it.
I got to tell you, I know it cost him $7,000.
I would just like to be part of that work team so I could sign the Bible with my favorite Bible verse. Because it would be the Bible verse about Lot's daughters getting Lot liquored up and having sex with him.
Well, when this guy came to my house, first he gave me a free 5-gallon bucket of cleaning supplies.
Wow.
Well, I want them to come to me now. Now I'm jealous.
No,
you gotta have a disaster.
Listen, Barbie's house was flooded out in the big Iowa flood back in 2008, And these, a carload full of kids from Minnesota just showed up on her doorstep with basic necessities, toilet paper and soap and towels and all the things that nobody thinks of to give you. They hauled all the furniture out of her house, dumped things. These kids were amazing. And then I think they even fed them.
Well, I think we can draw a distinction here. There's a difference between right-wing evangelical fundamentalists.
And people who walk the walk.
And people who are trying to live the, live the life of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi.
You mean useful idealism at that point? And some of them are that way, and then most of them turn.
Well, I mean, just to give you an example, a few years ago, when my dear friend, I consider him my brother and my colleague, Bo Webb. Was pulling together the questionnaire for the survey that was done down in the Coal River Valley about who got sick, when, and how, related to mountaintop removal. It was a group of kids from a Christian college who came in. They didn't know anything about the issue. They weren't advocates. They just bravely went door to door in places where folks are pretty well not terribly welcoming to strangers. And that's how we found out just how sick people in mountaintop removal communities really are. We have fun on this program with the outrageous conduct of the right wing evangelical fundamentalist movement. The other side of that card is where Sparky and I are and much of the Horn Family Commune congregation. I like the good Christians, and I was I was raised in that. I just can't buy into it anymore.
Well, if you do something good, if you're doing it because of whatever the reason is, whatever your motivation is, if the outcome is good, that's a good thing. I mean, if it's your own private motivation inside your head and you're doing good for others, that's cool.
Well, I try to convey to this guy, I've done good things in my life, but I've never been called by God to do them.
Yeah.
It helped me. I said, thank you. And I tried to tell him that atheists can do good things, too.
We do it every day.
Amen.
Hey, Bob, are you familiar with the Williamson Clan?
The Williamson what?
Williamson Clan. There were guys who worked out of West Virginia, and they were guys who would put a new blacktop ceiling on the driveway.
Oh, sure,
which
sure.
Which was really... Yeah, yeah.
Only that was a
car. Because I had one about me, and he wanted to work on my auto body on my car, and I was planning on doing it, but I knew right away, how did this guy walk up to me in a restaurant? He observed me come in, and he got a good look at me, and he came into the restaurant to give me the con job,
Right.
I'm not as dumb as I look, it's the way it goes. I just wanted to say, I really am pulling out of West Virginia.
Time.
This is what I've read about them.
Yep, time. You're absolutely right, Sparky. So I want to thank everybody for all the help this evening, starting out with Tom with his December is a Hard Month challenge. And thank everybody in the chat room for their participation this evening. Thank you to Glenn and Alex and Jan and Tim. Thank you to Ron. And let me see here. And thank you to Greg. Now, in terms of the challenge that still exists, there's $65 to go in the challenge that Tim put out there in answer to Tom's challenge. $65 to go on that. A reminder, the Horn Molloy Skype chat group will pick up and continue. It'll continue now, but it'll continue with a real will after midnight Eastern time when Malloy is over. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. And, hey, more in Mondays, only a couple of days away. Good night, y'all.